So this is session two. So the first session, session one, spiritual leaders are tough as nails. So in essence, if you want a single word that kind of captured that first leadership principle, it would be the word grit. Grit. Spiritual leaders have grit to them, or toughness to them. They're tough as nails. And you have to be balanced in leadership. So if you have an extra amount of grit, that means you're going to need a bit of grace. You're going to have to mix in with your toughness, tenderness. So when Paul in 1 Thessalonians 2 talked about spiritual leadership in the local church, you know what he described himself as? As a loving mother and a dutiful father. And so he draws from a paternal metaphor, mom and dad, and says that's what spiritual leadership looks like. If you back that up a little bit, that means you have to have both grit and grace. And so this second session, I want to challenge you that spiritual leaders love God and love people. Okay? So we're going to talk about your love life a bit here, because that is absolutely essential, that you love people. If you're going to lead people, and if leadership really is influence, then you're going to have to understand what that looks like, all right? And as a kind of setup passage, let me just read Matthew 22. We're going to be going to Revelation 4 and then also to 1 Corinthians 13. But as the single point text, I want to read Matthew 22. It's very familiar to you, verse 37 to verse 40. Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law? And this is Jesus speaking. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and foremost commandment. The second is like it, though. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. So spiritual leaders have two dominant red-hot passions. They're madly in love with Christ, and they love people. So if God so chooses that you would lead in whatever context you're in, let me assure you it's going to include loving people. So you can't be frustrated at people, mocking people, hating people, distrusting people, suspicious of people. These aren't attributes of spiritual leadership. You have to love God and love people. And so loving God is first and foremost of the two dominant passions. Satan, on the other hand, would love to distract you. Since we introduced him in Job chapter 1, we'll bring him up again. Satan would love to distract you. And, you know, it's not an overt distraction. It's a drawing away. It's a subtle drawing away. And I think Paul captured it very well in 2 Corinthians. And let me read it for you. 2 Corinthians 11. Hey, Aaron. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. Listen to this. But I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led away from the simplicity and devotion to Christ. You see that? So it's subtle. It's crafty. He's not overtly come and said, hey, follow me, I'm Satan. That's not going to be the case. It's going to be subtle. And it's marginal, and he marginalizes you, and he distracts you. And that verse always resonates with me. You're getting led away from the simplicity and devotion of Jesus Christ. Remember what I said, fundamental to leadership is character. Character's king. Character is born out of a clear, red-hot vision and passion and love for God. So this is what Paul wants us to understand. Satan loves to discourage you. And he will use people to do that. So he'll distract you. He'll also discourage you. And he uses people to do that. If you set your eyes on people, they will let you down. So what does the writer of Hebrews say? Hebrews chapter 12, verse 3 says, fix your eyes on who? Jesus, the author and finisher of faith. So if you look long and hard into any leader's life and ministry, you're going to find flaws. Because on my best day, I'm still a flawed leader. I sin like you sin. I make poor choices like you make poor choices. I get easily frustrated sometimes at people like you get easily frustrated at people. So being in ministry and even being a spiritual leader doesn't mean you don't get frustrated. You just can't get distracted. And the way you avoid getting distracted and discouraged is to keep your eyes fixated on Christ, which brings us full circle back to the necessity and having a dominant passion and being madly in love with Christ. Loving God is the second principle of spiritual leadership. And it's half the equation. The other half is loving people. So let's first look at loving God. Turn with me to Revelation chapter 2. I just want to draw your attention here because I think it's where we find ourselves too often. In Revelation chapter 2, you have the church of Ephesus mentioned. There are basically seven churches. This letter is written, the book of Revelation is written at around AD 95. So it's the last book written in the New Testament and placed there proportionately. And there's seven different churches. And Christ writes a letter to each of the seven churches. And it usually begins with some accommodation, some things they're doing really well. And then he points out something they need to work on. And that would be the normal pattern. Except for like Laodicea, he had nothing good to say for him. And Sardis as well. So he had nothing really good to say about those two. But what I want to draw your attention to is the church of Ephesus. And I want you to look at what their problem was, what their issue was. Look at this. Revelation 2, verse 1. To the angel of the church in Ephesus write. The angel would be the pastor. Okay? That's just a metaphor for the pastor. To the angel of the church in Ephesus write. The one who holds the seven stars in his right hand, the one who walks among the seven golden lampstands, says this. That's Christ. Okay? I know your deeds, your toil, and perseverance, and that you cannot tolerate evil men, and you put to the test those who call themselves apostles, and actually they're not, and you found them to be false. And you have perseverance, and have endured for my name's sake, and have not grown weary. Wow, that's intense. So six positive things he says about the church of Ephesus. And I'm telling you, you look at that. Their hard work, their perseverance, they don't put up with evil, they test their teachers, they've not capitulated on the name of Christ, they've honored him at any occasion, tough or easy, no matter what, they're always honoring Christ. And so you got these six things. I'm going to tell you something. If you just take verses 1 to 3, you're thinking, that's the kind of youth group I want to be a part of. That's the kind of church I want to be a part of, right? I mean, it's the few, the proud, the Ephesians. I mean, this is like a rocking group. You talk about an ultimate D3. If God would write a letter to us at D3 and say, hey, these six things are just killing it. It's superb. It's awesome. These are like great attributes. I mean, who wouldn't want to be said you work hard, you persevere, you don't tolerate evil, you test people, you examine them, you got great integrity, you've not grown weary. I mean, this is huge. But for the six positive commendations are then stripped away by one negative. But the one negative has the capacity to threaten the whole ministry there, the whole leadership structure. Look at verse 4. But I have this against you, that you left your first love. There it is. Spiritual leaders are lovers. They love God and they love people. They left their first love. I mean, that is a strong statement. So they had an A for activity and a D in devotion. They had full heads, busy feet, but a cold heart. And the proportion there, it doesn't matter how good they are in verses 1 to 3, if verse 4 is flawed, if they're found there in verse 4. And so I want to challenge you that as a spiritual leader, in whatever context God allows you to lead in, you have to keep in proportion a red-hot love for Christ. It's absolutely crucial to your leadership capacity there. And so he says, you've left your first love. And here's what the complication is. It's hard to recognize when someone's left their first love. Now, 25 years I've been in the ministry. 25 years I've been doing this. I have probably a few regrets, one dominant regret. The dominant regret is this. There have been seasons in my ministry when I have gone through the motions, and looked on the outside very spiritual, but inside I was neglecting my personal relationship with Christ and my love for Christ. And here's what's challenging in your youth groups and in this room at D3, in our churches. It's easy to get away with that because why? We equate busy with spiritual, and it's not always that case. So you could look at me and say, man, he's doing this, he's doing that, he's doing this, he's doing that. Well, that therefore equals spiritual. It doesn't always equal spiritual. And that's what I appreciate about this stiff wind of Revelation 2 in the church of Ephesus. They were rocking it in the first three verses. They got slaughtered in verse 4. They had left their first love. If you're going to lead other people, you first lead them in their relationship with Christ. And you do so by example. And that's why we talked about personal soul care last time, is what is the best thing you can do for people. Listen, the best thing you can do for the people you lead is to keep yourself in right relationship with Christ, to keep yourself in head over heels in love with Jesus Christ, to keep the fire there, the romance there, the understanding there in your relationship to Christ. It has to be a dominant passion in your life. How do you do that? It's back to those spiritual disciplines. No tricks. It's just back to the pure spiritual disciplines that you employ and deploy every single day of your life that foster relationship. Look, if you're gonna get to know somebody here at D3 and you meet a new friend and you want to forge that friendship, what do you got to do? You got to spend time with them, right? If you want to forge a new relationship with Christ or a fresh relationship with Christ or rekindle it, you got to spend time with him. And that's accomplished through those spiritual disciplines. So, spiritual leaders love God. But that's only half the equation. Here's the big point. Spiritual leaders love people. You have to love people. If you're going to lead, that means people are going to follow. And that means you got to love them. And you got to love them dearly. And that's that second dominant passion. Remember what Jesus said? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And then the what? The next commandment is what? Love everyone like they're your neighbor. I mean, you got to like love them like you love yourself. I mean, that's the kind of love affair that has to happen. And so if you're going to lead, you got to love people. You got to interact with people. You got to spend time with people. That means you're going to have to work hard at coming out of your shelf if you're kind of an introvert and not really an extrovert. Or you got to work hard at that because that's what leadership does. That's the functionality of leadership. Now, go to 1 Corinthians 13. Let me punctuate it with this text, because this is a humdinger of a bell ringer if there ever was one. 1 Corinthians 13. Just write it down. Don't think about it. It'll go away. I'm just glad it's cold in here. It's like a cool breeze just ripping through up front here. I'd probably take your sweatshirt off. It'd be the first sign of leadership. That's your first sign of leadership. Remove the black jacket. Okay. Good. Here's the deal. This is like, okay, so give you a little bit of context. Most people preach 1 Corinthians 13 at a wedding. So they cross-stitch the thing. No offense, Aaron. She's a big cross-stitcher. I'm just kidding. She's, you know, you go into a house and you see 1 Corinthians 13. Every wedding, you girls have all thought through your weddings, already bought your dress. We know that. We all know that. And so you're thinking, what's going to happen at my wedding? Well, I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13. Please understand, 1 Corinthians 13 is a corrective. It's a stiff exhortation. So here's the problem. You got the Corinthian church. Just a little bit of context. The Corinthian church, they're all messed up. They've got issues. Paul knows they've got issues. They write him a bunch of questions, seven in particular. And he responds to the seven questions. And he works his way through 1 Corinthians as the letter. They're just all messed up in all kinds of things. One of the things they were messed up on is gifts. And in, you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 13, it says they lacked no gift. So they're like the gift factory. They've got every spiritual gift working. It's grooving. They got their game on. All the gifts are in full motion. You get to 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14. Paul talks about the spiritual gifts. And he addresses the spiritual gifts. What they did is they had an inordinate affection with tongues, the ability to speak foreign languages that you don't know. All right? So they have this inordinate affection because of its drama and because of the nature of it. It is one of the spiritual gifts, no question, but they put all the emphasis there. They put all the energy there and says, we're into the tongues. And so Paul, in 1 Corinthians 12, 13, 14, he writes this corrective so that he'd reset their thinking on spiritual gifts. Now, look at chapter 12 and just read a couple of verses to kind of give us a bit of a runway. He says, 1 Corinthians 12:1. Now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I don't want you to be unaware. It's the word ignorant. He said, I don't want you to be ignorant. And then he launches into two chapters about clarifying what spiritual gifts there are. They have an inordinate affection for tongues. Paul says, that's not getting it. So 1 Corinthians 12 talks about gifts. 1 Corinthians 14 talks about gifts. 1 Corinthians 13 is the vanilla cream and the Oreo in the sandwich. It's the meat there. Right in the middle, he says, you better get this right. Look at it. And we'll start in verse 31 of chapter 12. But earnestly desire the greater gifts. Okay. So figure out which ones are the best gifts and earnestly desire those. That's what you're doing. But I show you still a more excellent way. I show you a better way. Let me lead you in clear waters. Let me define for you what really matters. Check it out. Verse 13, chapter 13. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. This is a corrective. Now check it out. What he does here is he grabs five illustrations from their culture, five things that they prize. He puts them in the showcase and says, if you're the best at any one of these five things, but you don't have love, you're nothing. And so what the Bible is doing is giving us a little bit of divine mathematics. Now, the Bible's not a mathematics book, thankfully. But when it speaks about mathematics, it doesn't follow convention rules. So let me give you a little math test. I know this is summertime, but stay with me. Math test. 5 minus 1 equals 4. Not here, though. Not here. It's 0. If you have 5 of the top spiritual gifts, but you lack love, they're not seasoned and induced and informed by love, guess what? You got a big goose egg. You got nothing. Let's look at all 5 of them, because these are 5 things that they prize, and I think it would be fair to say we would prize if we were there in the first century as well. And you're going to see that he basically comes down and say, look, if you have all these killer spiritual gifts, in other words, you've got all the skill in the world and all the core competencies in the world, but you lack love, you will not be an effective spiritual leader. It's impossible. So look at it. If I speak with the tongues of men, okay, so you have the most eloquent ability to speak the tongues of men. And it's interesting because the angels, the Hebrews in Acts 17 said they spoke Hebrew. So that's what the angels thought it was. So it was a known language. So if, in other words, he's saying if you could speak with tremendous eloquence, like the tongues of men, this is not some weird foreign, you know, static language. It's not what Paul's referencing at all. He's talking about the ability with eloquence to speak. If I could speak like the tongues of men or of like angels. So if I had the capacity of an angel, but I don't have love, what am I? A noisy gong and a clanging cymbal. He grabs two instruments. Both instruments are made for orchestration. If you take a cymbal outside of orchestration, it's an irritation, right? I mean, it's just, nobody just walks around, bang, bang, bang. That drives everybody bonkers, right? That's how you get people to dislike you. So you're a clanging cymbal or a noisy gong. But in orchestration, when they're with everything, then it works. He says, basically, if you can speak better than anybody on the planet, on your feet, and you've got the, the eloquence of an angel and you don't have love, you're an irritant to the body of Christ. You're an irritant in your leadership because you lack an essential component. But he continues on. What about the gift of prophecy? So in other words, you could predict and discern the scriptures. You could give clarity to theology. You could give insight into theology. Or you know all mysteries. So you know every secret thing about God. What if you knew everything? Or you know, look at the all there, all the knowledge. Like you're like super knowledge person. 1 Corinthians 8:11 says, knowledge what? Puffs up. And if I have faith so as to move mountains. So this, check it out. So you have the ability, the capacity, Paul says. What if you could go up to the Adirondacks and say, Adirondacks, move to Michigan. And you could literally move the mountains. I mean, that's a pretty good gift. I'd like to have that one personally. I mean, it's one of my favorite. I mean, moving mountains is a big deal. Think of the construction costs you could save and the money you could make. No back. I mean, we'd put, you know, put John Deere out of business, right? So, I mean, it's a pretty big gift, right? So if I have all the faith as to move mountains, but I don't have love, what does the text say? Zero. Zero. Okay, what about some philanthropy? You guys don't understand what philanthropy is? You know, giving back or giving to people? So what if I give all my possessions? Wow, this is like a killer person in the community. I mean, think about it. They basically take on themselves poverty and they give of their wealth or excess and they give it to the community and it just changes people's lives. Wow, I mean, that's like huge. I mean, we're going to give them a best seat in the church, right? If I give all my possessions to feed the poor, what about if I surrender my body to be burned? Martyrdom. So I give up my body for the cause of Christ. I yield down, I lay down my body for the cause of Christ. Look what the text says. But I don't have love. What are you? Zero. Learn this well. Learn it in your youth. Spiritual leadership means you love God and you love people. And you'll never be an effective leader unless you love both. And those are the two dominant passions. Paul picked five metaphors, five illustrations in the community. And trust me, these probably were all happening in Corinth. And he could actually point to, you know, Mr. Smith or Mr. Jones or, you know, Mr. Mark over there and say, "What, like Mr. Mark, who gave up all his money to feed all the poor in Corinth, in downtown Corinth, in that urban setting. He gave it all." Do you hear what Paul's saying? You're nothing. You talk about a corrected passage because they're all saying, man, you got to have the gift of tongues. The gift of tongues rocks. It's the premier gift. Everybody's doing it. Everybody wants the gift of tongues. And he says, doesn't matter what you have. If you don't have love, you don't have nothing. You're a zero. You have to understand the significance of loving people. If you don't have a deep-seated love for people, then you shouldn't be in spiritual leadership because that's the ministry. Ministry and caring for people is what matters. This is what the ministry is all about, is people. Who cares about stuff? Everything you see, God says, I'm going to burn up. Okay, your house, your hat, your sunglasses, the chairs, the carpet. One day, he's going to vaporize this planet. It's all going to go away. So the only thing that remains is people in eternity, and that's why you invest, and that's why you're on mission. And you have to have, as a spiritual leader, love for God and love for people. But here's what's cool. Then you would probably, or should be asking, what does that look like? I mean, how do I love? If love for God is the expectation of spiritual leadership and our second principle, then what does it look like? There's the energy guy. Help us, Dan. We're smoking hot. What are you breathing, Dan? What are you, show them.
65, 66.5.
There's no way. Out of there? Yeah, but it's not blowing at -2.1995.
We'll check out the CFM on it.
Yeah, and the TDY, the QRP. He's in charge of our energy. He knows how to make things colder. It's going to be too late, Dan. I think it's the Lord doing this because they're learning about being red hot in love with Christ. Thanks, buddy. Okay, so here's what you should be asking. How do I do it, right? What does it look like on the street? Guess what? Check out verse 4. He just goes in staccato fashion. Boom, 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 boom. He says, this is what love is. This is what love does. And this is what love does not do. So let's just look at it. I'll just read them. And then what you've got to do is in your small groups, you've got to go back and bust it up and say, hey, I'm either doing that or I'm not doing that. They're real black and white. You're either in or you're out. You're either doing these things. And love does some things and love avoids some things. Okay? So there it is. So he says, you better have love or you're nothing. Well, Dan, tell us, then what does love look like? How do I know if I have it? Ha ha. Ha ha. Verse 4. Love is patient. Love is kind. Here's the cool thing. You could replace the word love with Jesus. And it'd be the same. Jesus is patient. Jesus is kind. Jesus is not jealous. Jesus does not brag. Jesus is not arrogant. Hey, let's do your name in there. Aaron is patient. Aaron is kind. Aaron is not jealous. Aaron doesn't brag. Aaron's not arrogant. Aaron doesn't act unbecomingly. You see what you can do? So you got to personalize the passage. Put your name in there. And then you got to be gut honest, brutally honest, right? But check it out. Love is patient. Well, also, love is a verb. It doesn't mean, it's not a noun. It's action. So you can talk a big game. Christ and Paul are always concerned about you living a big game. So you can talk about it all saying, hey, I'm loving. Well, if you're not doing these, guess what, Skipper? You're self-deceived. You're not, right? That's not true leadership. So look at it. So it's action. It can be replaced by Christ or your name. Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not jealous. Doesn't brag. Is not arrogant. See, there's some things it avoids. Love does not act unbecomingly. It doesn't seek its own. Oh, that'll be a one for tomorrow. Note that one. Highlight it. I'll bring it up tomorrow for you. Remind me. Is not provoked. Does not take into account a wrong suffered. Oh, it doesn't keep a register of ills that people do against you. It doesn't record all that stuff. It just doesn't do that. It just constantly forgives. Well, how do you forgive like that? Well, because you know Christ forgave you for all your stupidity, right? That's what it is. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Oh, check out this. It bears all things. It believes all things. Do you know there's no gift of suspicion? There's no gift of suspicion in the New Testament. So if someone says something, you have to believe it. You have to believe what they say. You don't have the right, biblical right, to think, I don't think they're telling the truth. Now, it doesn't mean you don't scrutinize it and examine it, but there's no gift of suspicion. This is what love looks like. It bears all things. It believes all things. It hopes all things. It endures all things. So I think those, 12 or 13 items right there is a good place for us to start in doing some soul searching, right? Some soul work, some soil work, getting rid of that fallow ground. So back up. The first dominant passion you must have in your life is a love for God. And that love is not based upon activity, but on devotion. And if you're not careful, as you chart down a leadership course, you're going to exchange activity for spirituality. And you'll be deceived. You'll think people, and you'll give them positions of leadership when really they're just being really dutiful and busy, not necessarily fully head over heels in love with Christ. First dominant passion is that you love God. The second, if you're going to be in spiritual leadership, you better love people. So you've got to do some research on your heart. You've got to audit your life, and you've got to audit right now in high school. When you go to school, you don't blow off people. The gospel doesn't blow off people. You don't treat people unbecomingly. You don't walk down the halls and disdain someone because of the way they look. You don't walk around cocky as if you're somebody special. I mean, you just don't do that. You get beyond the physical and you get to the heart. And gospel ministry and gospel leadership loves people. Does God look at the outside or does he look at the inside? Right. He said, I don't care about your outside. It doesn't matter what you look on the outside. He looks at the heart. That's why as spiritual leaders, we lead with heart. We lead with devotion. We love God and we love people. You say, well, Uncle Dan, how do I do that? What does that look like? It's right there. And please, do not miss verses 1 and 2. If you don't have love, I don't care what you got. You could be the high school quarterback and the best cheerleader in the world or whatever you do, playing the band to the glory of God. Whatever you do, if you don't have love, you aren't going to amount to jack squat in leadership. Period. The field is leveled there in 1 Corinthians 13. So then what does it look like? Right there. Love is patient. Love is kind. And you work your way through that list. And you get with your friends and you talk to them and say, hey, is that you? Or call each other out. Hey, you're not displaying New Testament biblical love. God's ways aren't our ways. So it's not picking your friends and choosing these friends and disdaining these friends. Look, you're in high school and you want to make a difference. Your leadership starts right now as a young person, not in the future. It starts right now when you go back to campus in September or you go back in August, whenever you go back. This passage ought to resonate and reform and set a new course for how you care about people. Why? Because everybody you lay eyes on in high school is either going to heaven or hell. And God strategically placed you in that school for a specific person to love people. That's how spiritual leadership thinks. It doesn't matter what context you're in. If my car breaks down on the side of the road this afternoon on the way home from D3, then guess what I'm going to do? I'm thinking, that means there's some tow truck driver that needs Christ. Because he's coming to help me, and I'm going to share the gospel. That's just the way you think. Everybody that's sitting beside you, you think you just strategically picked that seat? Everybody around you in your class is an opportunity of the gospel. That's how spiritual leadership thinks. It loves God, and it loves people. Thoughts. It's a gut check, but if you're going to be a spiritual leader, you got to love God, and you got to love people. It's rather simple, but hard to live. And I'll tell you, here's the deal. If you're not doing the loving God, you won't love people. One informs the other. That's the trick. That's the mystery. So if you try to love people without loving God, it messes you up. But when you love God, it will produce the love of God, as Romans 5 said, is shed abroad in your heart. It fills the heart up, and out of that overflow, you'll what? You'll love people for the glory of God. Questions? You don't want to ask questions because you want to get out of this miserably hot room, don't you? I love it. I'm just keep talking. I'm just kidding. No questions? Okay, so what have we covered so far? We're only a quarter away there. Grit and grace. I'm trying to give you words to remember. You're failing. Grit and grace. Both two make a balanced spiritual leader. And that just sets the foundation. Now we're going to move into the next DNA level. And we'll do that tomorrow morning. And then all day Thursday. And we'll rock it, okay?